Our next presenter is Tap Bui, who serves as the Deputy Director at the Mary Queen of Vietnam Community Development Corporation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to promoting and preserving the unique diversity of New Orleans East. In her role, Tap manages the daily operations of the organization and provides leadership and direction to the staff. She has organized social justice campaigns and health education programs to address the needs of the community. Tap is pursuing an MPH at the Louisiana State University Health Sciences Center School of Public Health. And she'll be talking with us today about a look at community academia research in the Vietnamese community following the Deepwater Horizon disaster.
So, hello again. My name is Tap Bui, and I'm the Deputy Director of MQVN Community Development Corporation. So I'm here to talk about the Vietnamese community in New Orleans and also the different projects that we're involved with. And then just overall looking at the strategies, successes, and challenges of working with or having a relationship with academia and community partners. So just a show of hands, is anybody here familiar with the Vietnamese community in New Orleans East? Or have ever heard of them before this session? Thank you, Liz and Liam. So I wanted to give a brief history of the community. This community really started in 1975 after the end of the Vietnam War. At that time, Vietnamese refugees fled to a refugee camp in Arkansas, and Archbishop Hannon of New Orleans wanted to invite the Vietnamese refugees to live in New Orleans for two major reasons. One, the climate and temperature is very similar to that of Vietnam's, and the second, there was a booming fishing industry here. So a lot of these displaced refugees were from main fishing villages back in Vietnam. They relocated to Versailles Arms Apartments, so that's where the community also gets its nickname Versailles, not from France, but because of the apartments. And in the beginning, there were 12 families in 1975 that came to New Orleans East. Right now, we're about maybe 8,000 residents strong. So we're dubbed as one of the most concentrated Vietnamese American communities outside of Vietnam because we're all concentrated in a 1 mile radius. So even though California has like over 100,000 residents of Vietnamese Americans, they're sort of dispersed. But currently, as of the U.S. Census 2010, there are about 20,000 Vietnamese Americans living in Louisiana. What's also really cool about Vietnamese communities in Louisiana is that they all center around the Roman Catholic Church. So even though 86% of Vietnamese in Vietnam are Buddhist, the majority, over 90% of Vietnamese Americans here are Roman Catholics. And then that just has to do with a lot of the missionary work and their involvement with the Catholic Church, especially in the relocation of refugees. We're one of four Vietnamese communities in Louisiana, well, in the Greater New Orleans area. We're the largest, and we're centered around the Mary Queen of Vietnam Church. So we share the same name as the church, but we're officially not affiliated. We were formed, again, after Hurricane Katrina to really assist residents in their rebuilding and recovery efforts. We're a community development corporation, so CDC, not Centers for Disease Control, but the CDC, and we focused on things like senior housing, healthcare, education, social services, environmental justice, so pretty much everything. So when the Deepwater Horizon disaster happened, the community was obviously affected. This is in just a preliminary data that we collected. It's a $3 billion economy that provides for a third of the seafood for the U.S. Of the 40,000 Vietnamese Americans living in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama, one in three are involved in the fishing industry. So what does this mean when the oil spill happens? It means that 80% of Vietnamese Americans are affected directly by the BP oil disaster. So halt in the seafood industry really affected our communities. The Vietnamese and Southeast Asian vets actually make up one-third of all shrimping vessels in the Gulf Coast. And these are just some preliminary data we got when we collected about 6,000 Vietnamese fisher boats from Louisiana affected, 2,500 in the New Orleans area, 2,000 from Mississippi, and 2,000 from Alabama. So immediately, community members had concerns of the loss of livelihood, because as you know, this is something that has been embedded in traditions, you know, from when they were living in Vietnam. So this is a part of their culture, but it's just not a job that they went to on a monthly basis. This is something that's ingrained and instilled while they were growing up. They're also worried about the long-term effects of the BPO drilling disaster on the financial stability of the community. So obviously the economy was affected. But for these low-income families, you know, not being able to work just for a couple of months had large devastations on their entire households. And then we saw effects or concerns around mental and physical health, especially in the mental health piece, because we were a one-stop shop for a lot of these residents, and as they were going through our offices, they're coming with concerns of, well, my husband is more agitated, or he's drinking a lot more. Like, should I be concerned? This is just a picture of one of our fisher folks with his vessel. So again, we were a one-stop shop for a lot of the emergency responses to the disaster. You know, we provided folks with technical assistance to help the claims process. We provided food vouchers, you know, utilities assistance, mental health counseling, mental health and crisis counseling, SNAP services, and Medicaid services. So because we have worked endlessly after Hurricane Katrina to help residents get back on their feet, we've built that trust where community members immediately come to us after any disaster to ask us what are the resources available and how can I voice my concerns so that others can hear. A large part of our work is also around community organizing. So we hosted actually the largest community town hall to date. Over 400 residents were present, we did a series of power mapping to engage, not only engage residents, but also empower them. We built coalitions across all the different Southeast Asian fisher folks communities, and also on a larger coalition building initiative with the Gulf Organized Fisheries and Solidarity and Hope. And that's just working across all races and all fishing industries, pretty much. So we work with the oystermen, with the shrimpers, the longline tunamen, but we also work with African-American communities, with the Latino communities, and the Vietnamese communities. And we advocated for language access, which is a huge deal after the disaster because most of the materials or news that came out were all done primarily in English. So we advocated for Vietnamese translations of materials that were not only linguistically competent, but also culturally competent. Because this community is very special in that you know, it's a little village, and so there are a lot of cultural barriers that exist in the Gulf that's not the same as any other Vietnamese communities anywhere elsewhere. We also advocated for subsistence use because not only do these fisher folks sell their catches, but they bring home and eat their catches. So that helped in the seafood industry not only affected them financially, but it also affected just the overall everyday makeup or lifestyle at home with having the absence of seafood as part of their daily diet. Here's a picture of one of the community town halls that we went to, and to show that we were standing in unity and in solidarity, we passed out orange wristbands to everyone who were present, just to show, honestly, the BP administrators and Ken Feinberg, who was at this meeting, that the communities here were standing in unity. And this gentleman right here is wearing a sign that says, Doi Gau Gan and Doi Bao Dai. That literally translates to, I fish, therefore I exist. And that's just a play of René Descartes' I think, therefore I am. Because fishing is so embedded in just to their livelihoods that they really feel that this is who they are. So this is our community power map, one of my favorite initiatives at the organization. President Obama looks oddly Asian, but that's not on purpose. So we wanted to create a power map to show residents how the claims process works and in what ways do community residents have influence in this process. So obviously BP and President Obama are at the top of the map because they hold the most power in this process. Then they hired Ken Feinberg, created the Gulf Coast Claim Facilities, and so this is a process map also. So we went out to different community residents and we said, this is what happens when you put in a claim, or this is the process that's being set up. Where in this process do you feel like you should have the most power? So we would go out to residents and they would physically place red dots on where in the process they think or they thought that they should have the most influence. And most people would place it where Ken Feinberg's name is because they felt that since they were directly affected by the Deepwater Horizon disaster, they should be the ones in charge of selecting who should be the czar or have input on who should be the czar of the $20 billion claims that came back to community residents. So this is a very empowering power map because not only do residents sort of get a mental picture of how the process works, but we also told them that this is money that's owed to you. It's not money that you're begging for, because at that point in time, folks really felt like they were standing outside of these Gulf Coast Claims Facility doors and begging for funds, when really these are funds that are owed to them. And when you tell them that in Vietnamese, their eyes just kind of lighten. They're like, you know what, you're right. Why are we standing here fighting for every nickel and dime when this is money that's owed to us? So we trained foot soldiers to understand this power map, and then they then went out to other residents in the communities and also performed the power map. So we collected over 450 of these power maps, and it really, again, like built the unity piece of the community. So this is Father Vian, who was the previous pastor of the Mary Queen of Vietnam Church and was one of the integral leaders that led the community back after Katrina and also in the BP oil drilling disaster efforts. This is one of our sessions where we did the power mapping. So with the successes of building unity, making sure the communities come together, we then looked towards the future of the organization and also the community, because as of now, you know, we're, as of the end of 2010, we were still in direct disaster emergency response. And that's just a temporary band-aid. You know, we need to look at different long-term recovery efforts that can build on the sustainability of the community. So we partnered with several universities to look at different citizen science projects. And the first one we did was in collaboration with Washington State University and also NSF, actually. And that is for, you know, for community residents to really be involved in every single aspect of that social, that science study, really to go out to collect specimens in the Gulf, come back, analyze the data, look at whether or not the seafood quality was impacted by the oil drum disaster. We also implemented an alternative workforce solution at the organization because, you know, a lot of these times, a lot of times folks didn't want to go back out in the Gulf to work because they just felt that it was so unstable. So we identified an alternative workforce solution that will ease community residents into a different career. So we also, like Daisy said, have a community health center that's federally qualified. And what I'm really here to really talk about is the Gulf Coast Research Consortium on Women's Health, so GRO, which is in partnership with Tulane School of Public Health and also funded by NIEHS, to look at the health effects of the oil drilling disaster on women's health. So this has three projects, and this is a CBPR approach. I mean, everyone here knows what CBPR is, community-based fiduciary research. So we actually hosted a community town hall where we brought together residents, and they were the ones that told us, you know, these are things that we want to look at. Specifically, whether or not the oil has adverse effects on women's and on women's health or the future of our children. And the second thing is just looking at the seafood quality, really, because this is something that they're not only selling, but something that they're also eating. So those are the two major things they wanted to look at. What I'm in charge of is the Community Outreach and Dissemination Corps. So just want to talk about a little bit about that. We actually have one of our members in here, Liz, with LPHI, who is helping us with the Community Outreach and Dissemination Corps. But the overall goal is to utilize community-based participatory research and outreach strategies to strengthen the community resilience in vulnerable Gulf Coast populations. We're also in the process of developing a tailored dissemination strategy for GRO. Because it is a five-year study, we're in a fourth year, so results are coming up. And we want to make sure that we have a dissemination strategy in place in order to be able to outreach the community and let them know the progress of the study. But what's what we're really advocating for is this, or looking at is just not just the actual communication and dissemination plan, but the strategies that will be a part of that plan. So my colleague, Daniel Nguyen, I don't know if you guys have gone to his session, but he also spoke a little bit on this. It's really important that we put in a vetting process in terms of looking at the results and how to disseminate them, because not only does it build in like checks and balances, but there's also building in a cultural competence piece where there's tiered levels of communications. You know, like when their results are coming out, we want to have one-on-ones with residents just to make sure that these are the results that they want to hear or that they are interested in. And that also sort of like eliminates any panic that may come out of disseminating information to a larger group without vetting it first. So for example, say if the study comes back and, you know, it finds that seafood quality is good, it's good to eat, and that's what residents have been doing for the past few years. But if you disseminate the information to a larger community where they're not familiar that this research has been going on and they're then doubting that what's going on, why are you looking at the shrimp? Is this something that's not safe? You can, you know, cause panic that isn't necessary. So that's why one-on-one communicating with like residents who are involved with it, with leaders who are at the front line, vetting that through them, and then going through larger, like moving on to the next step of focus groups where we'll invite a specific group of people to come and look at and vet the process, and then overall like the larger community town halls. So that's one strategy for us, the vetting process. The next strategy is just to make sure that we have culturally competent targeted translations. So not only in the verbal translations of English to Vietnamese materials, but also making sure that whatever it is that that we're translating is appropriate to this community, especially in using lingual that is very familiar to this community. It's very Gulf specific, and also translational research, making sure that the research that are translated into the community levels are things that the communities wants to see. So I guess this is just a plug to talk about, you know, how to work with the Vietnamese American communities. It was really effective for us to correct direct lines of communications, not only with academia, but also with partners. Understand the importance of community-driven processes because, you know, when community members are empowered, they take initiatives into their own hands, and that just makes this, any project or any process more successful. And then we also, like, creating council of community leaders, you know, so that residents feel that they can have a voice in any part of process, whether it be building coalitions or being involved in scientific studies. I think we talk about trust a lot and transparency, and that's really important for community members because at this point in time, they may feel a lot of study fatigue. So recognizing and understanding the importance of civic engagement. So again, like active engagement, making sure that they're empowered, making sure that they have a seat at the table and be at the decision-making table. So one thing that Father Vian always says is that we want to be at the table, not on the menu. So that's very important to us, knowing power players, educating the community, and then gaining the trust of the community. So that's it for our presentation.
Are there any questions?
We've had different issue-specific coalitions, but we've never had a coalition that just focused on the needs of the fisher folks. So it's the first time we saw a Southeast Asian Fisher Folks Association. Yes.
Yeah, we partnered with Mary Queen of Vietnam since the beginning. They were part of the Latino Forum because after Katrina, there wasn't one venue for everybody to hear the same information of where the services were, what was going on. So we put it together for the Latino community with the National Council of Morocco. And since everybody was coming there to give information, the Vietnamese community started to come as well. And so the
So I wanted to say something about coalitions that I said in a different setting, but it's okay for coalitions to end, in a sense. Because the Southeast Asian Fisherfolk Association was really created as a direct response of the needs of the Southeast Asian fisherfolks in response to the BP oil drilling disaster. But they have since yet, lately they haven't been as organized or haven't been on the radar, but that's okay because I think they were there to serve a purpose and it was completed.
They really could reformulate around
yeah.
another problem.
Yeah,
because
so that's why it's very issue-specific and issue-driven.